awake a little bit, because I feel like it's been a good day, but also a long time. It's a lot to, you know, so. All right, my name is Heather Farrell, and I have been homeschooling. My oldest is 18, and my youngest is 18 months, so I have a big, wide gap, and we've been homeschooling the whole way through, and I have seven kids. And I'm an author. I write about women in the Bible and women in the scriptures. And then I also am a teacher in my home, but I also feel like my spiritual gift is teaching. I love to teach. So I just started teaching Hebrew lessons, Hebrew classes this last little bit, and I love all those nerdy things that have to do with scriptures. But my real passion and my real love is anything having to do with women. And I told you I read about women in the scriptures, and I love the power of women. I remember being about 16 or 17 years old and going to Metropolitan Museum of Art, and there was a statue of Diana, like the goddess Diana, and she was, you know, in the nude and just in all her beauty. And I remember standing in front of that and crying. And I remember, I was like, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "I don't know. But women, we are just so beautiful." And that's sort of like a core memory in my heart of just that feeling of like there's something so beautiful and so divine about women. And about what our gifts are. And I feel like so often those feminine gifts and those feminine powers are not valued by the world. We're only sometimes valued by what we do that is man-like, you know, and we don't get credit for those powers that are female. And so today I want to talk about some female power and how that relates to peace. I just want to share a little bit about my journey to homeschool. Actually came through something called peace education. And when I was in college, I worked for a professor, and she was studying women and peace. And my task that she gave me was to research all the peace education programs that existed in the world. So any program that was designed to with nonviolence, or to create friendships, or anti-bullying, or Israeli-Palestinians, or the Catholics and Protestants in Ireland, any of those types of programs, I was supposed to research them and find out how effective they were. So I spent a year at 20 years old looking at all these programs, and at the end of the year, my research concluded that none of them worked. That's really what we came to, is the most they could do was make people not kill each other and not hate each other. But none of them were really creating what we would call like lasting or like long-term peace. And so I was sitting at my computer, and I was reading Maria Montessori's book called Education and Peace. And I was reading her book, and I can't remember what passage I got to. I've gone back and tried to find what it was I had read. But I got to some part, and I stopped, and I put my book down, and I turned to my 19-year-old coworker, and I said, "I'm going to homeschool my kids." And she said, "What? Why would you do that?" And I was like, "Because after everything that I have spent this whole year studying, that's the best solution. That's the answer to peace education, is that it has to start with women, and it has to start with moms, and it best taught in the home." And that was my, that I think was God putting that homeschooling message in my heart, because that was later on when I had kids, I was like, okay, well, let me give this homeschooling thing a try, right? And I started out, and we've been going for 18 years, right? And I feel like that, and then as I found more about, as I got introduced to more homeschooling things, I realized that Charlotte Mason, she also had the same message. Oh, I'm sorry, my slides cut off at the bottom. Hopefully they don't cut off all the way. But she said, "Parents are the peacemakers of the world, and if they fail, war must come, whoever our rulers might be." And that one was really powerful, right? That peace begins with parents. And Rudolf Steiner, he's the creator of Waldorf education. Waldorf education came from the question. His question that he asked was, how can we educate children to create peace? That was his founding question of his Waldorf method. And all these educators wrote a lot after, Maria Montessori was after the Second World War, and Charlotte Mason and Rudolf Steiner were after the First World War. And they had just watched the world destroy itself, right? And they were writing, how do you prevent this? What do you do? Like, how do you change this? And their answer was education, and kind of people's hearts. And Charlotte Mason, I think she got it right the most. She said that it was mothers that were the changing catalyst and what would change the most would bring peace. And I love all these quotes about the power, about the of mothers. Because if you think about it, a nation is made up of, the United States is made up of millions of tiny little nations, right? Every home and every family is a nation, and it's a culture, and whether it goes to war, whether it's at peace, determines whether the culture and the nation at large is at war or at peace. And so every little family is ruled, right, by a mother and a father, and they are the presidents, I will say the co-presidents, right, they're not like president and vice president, but they're the presidents, they're the king and queen of that country, right, and they get to direct it, they get to lead it, they get to develop the culture of it, they get to develop whether it's going to go to war, whether it's going to hate this person, what it's going to think about this. They develop all those different ideas in their country, right? And women have a big part to play in that, right? We know that the family, like, women really shape a lot of the family culture. Because it's from us, it's from our bodies, it's from women's bodies that civilization and cultures exist, right? Without us, there would be no people. And with no people, there'd be no culture, and there'd be no countries, right? So women have always been the foundation of civilizations and of what culture is, because it comes from us. And I wanted to just share this too, that this idea of women and their power for peace also goes back to the Civil War. It goes back a long ways, but I love this one. This is Julia Ward Howe, and she wrote this after the Civil War. And she actually started Mother's Day, which I don't know. This is a little known fact, which you probably didn't know before. But Mother's Day originally was a day of peace. And she has something called the Mother's Day Proclamation, which you should go read and be passionate. But she calls on the women of the world to rise up and to stand for peace and to not to let other women's sons kill other women's sons, right? So she stands up and she asks women, she's like, if we can rise up, we can prevent another war, right? But then, I mean, obviously, didn't other wars still came. But I love this. And so from her proclamation, she started celebrating Mother's Day on June 2nd. It was small local women that would get together and celebrate Mother's Day as a movement for peace. Anna Jarvis, her mother, Anne Jarvis, had been friends with Julia Ward Howe, and they had been really involved in peace work between the North and the South after the Civil War, about reconstructing and bringing peace between different groups in the North and the South. And so Anna Jarvis campaigned to have it made into a federally recognized day, of Mother's Day being a recognized day. And it was recognized in 1914 for the first time. And actually it's kind of sad because several years, not long after Mother's Day became a holiday, Anne Jarvis tried to get it removed, because she was so sad to see that it had become a commercialized day that had lost its meaning. And I thought that was really interesting, because I know lots of women who don't love Mother's Day, right? Who feel different, conflicted. And I thought, that's because the power of it, right, the call to action, it was not meant as a day of honoring, it was not meant as a day of, you know, let's say how great you are. It was a day meant for women to rise up and to step into our feminine power and change the world, right? It was a time for us to say, wow, women have a gift and a place and a power. And I feel like that's something that would be awesome to see come back. Right? So if anybody wants to celebrate Mother's Day this year with a peace rally, I am all for it, just so you know. But I love that. And I just think that there's a lot of power in that I feel like that goes untapped and that we don't oftentimes realize that we have. And so my talk today is not about world peace, because I know some of you are thinking, like, world peace, man. If I could just have peace in my house, like, that would be something, right? And I actually was laughing this morning because my husband's here, and he asked me, what's your talk on? I said, I'm talking about Mothers of Peace. Literally 2 minutes later, we had this huge eruption in our house, and everybody left in not peaceful ways. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go talk about peace, right? I'm going to talk about how you do this in your homeschool, how you bring peace to your life, because it starts in each one of our nations, right? If each country is made up of tiny little nations, the peace starts in our own nation that we can control, and it starts with us. These are some of my women. We lived in Jerusalem for 2 years, and one time when I was going by the old city, this is outside Damascus Gate, there's a group of Israeli and Palestinian mothers that get together and stand in solidarity against the war in Israel and Palestine, and their whole basis is that we're mothers, and we're not going to let our sons kill each other and hate each other. And I was like, woohoo! My kids actually said, Mom, those are your women. And I was like, yeah, they are. you'll bake it in your homes for every day of the year, right? And that really, I mean, it seems so simple, but that's really how we're going to achieve peace in the world, right? Is that it starts on those individual levels, because there's only so much you can do if you don't have people who are peaceful in their own hearts. Okay, so how do we do it, right? Because I feel like peace is one of those great things where, like, yeah, it would be amazing if we had peace in our home, in my heart. But it's really hard to achieve sometimes, right? It's really hard to achieve in a world that is not peaceful and in situations that are tumultuous and are really hard. So this is, did I get a picture? Nope, I didn't get a picture. Okay. Oh, goodness. Okay. I was going to get a little picture here, but I don't think I got it put up. But this is what I call the master's wheel, and it comes from, have you guys ever seen The Mask of Zorro? The movie about Mask of Zorro? Okay. All right. There's a part where Antonio Banderas meets Nicolas Cage, and Nicolas Cage is the old Zorro, and he's learning how to be the new Zorro, and he really wants revenge on the man who killed his brother. So they start out in this circle, and it's like a fighting ring, like they're going to learn how to fight, right? And so he stands in the middle. Nicolas Cage puts Antonio Banderas in the middle, and he says, okay, the guy you want to get to is all the way out there. So he's like, no, you have to master this circle first. So you have to be able to handle anything I throw at you in this circle first. You cannot move out of the circle, right? So he has to fight in the circle. And once he can master that circle, then the circle expands to the next one. And then he can do it. And so he works out until he can master all those circles, until he reaches his goal. And this is something in my own life that I should get this made into a necklace or something. I don't know. But this is something that I think about a lot in my own life. Whenever I feel overwhelmed or things are hard, I think, okay, go back to my master circle. Because here, I have to start with myself and my own heart, right here in the middle, right? And I have to go back and center myself and say, do I have mastery over myself? Do I have mastery over my own heart? Do I have mastery here? Because if not, I have no business moving out into these other circles yet, right? And sometimes this can be a daily thing. This can be something like, whoa, I'm going to my room right now so I can just come back to my middle circle, right? Because I'm not doing so well out here. But once we move out of that circle, the next one, it's our spouse. We're thinking about peace and relationships, right? And moving out next to that next one, right? About how is our relationship doing with our spouse? Because that is a huge part of what brings peace into our home, right? And sometimes you cannot control somebody else, right? So I'm not a therapist or anything like that, right? But you just have to sometimes do what you can in that circle, right? You can't always control somebody else. But I just want to say to this professor that I was sitting with, I had a conversation with her one time, and she pointed out to me, she's like, Heather, the most basic conflict in this world is between man and woman. She's like, they're the two original opposites. They're the two original differences. She's like, and all conflicts and most conflicts stem from there not being unity and peace between man and woman. And I was like, whoa! Right? So in our home, this is huge, right? This is huge to have that unity and that peace between male and female. Okay, then we move out to our family, and then after that, we go to others. And family, I also want to put your extended family, because whether you like it or not, like, your relationship with your parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles does affect your kids. I had a mom who did not get along with her family, and it deeply affected my life, not knowing them until I was an adult. Like, I didn't realize it, right, until I was an adult, and I was like, whoa, there were some significant consequences in my life by not having a relationship with those people, you know, and I don't know. So you have to kind of take that in consideration along there too. But sometimes our initial part, right, is to come out here to the circle and try to tackle this one before we have peace in these ones, right? So, okay, so start with yourself, right? And I love this wise philosopher John Lennon. I thought this was a great quote, right? Because sometimes peace is not just something that happens magically. It's something you actively create. It's something that takes work, right? The principle of thermodynamics, right, is entropy, that everything goes to its basis state, including people, including families, right? And to fight against entropy, you have to put energy into it and lift it up, right? So this is something that takes work. And I'm not going to focus too much on yourself or the spouse, but I will recommend this book. If you have not read this book, it is completely life-changing. And really, really hard. So I'll just say this is really, really hard stuff to do and implement in your life, but really, really amazing. Has anybody read this book? Yes. Okay. Yeah. But like, how did you? Yeah, but kind of like really uncomfortable, right? Okay. You're like, oh man, that really, ouch. Like I feel like sometimes when you read it, you're like, oh, yeah. I don't think I do that. Mm-hmm. But really, really powerful things. So I would recommend that one if you're struggling with that foundational, those foundational circles. This one is a great place to start. Okay, so oh goodness, that did not show up very, very good on my slide. Okay, but we're going to talk about peace in your homeschool because. That's really important, right? And this is foundational. And it's interesting, I've had quite a few people tell me when they first start to homeschool, like, wow, this is really hard, right? And it's not hard because of curriculum, it's not hard because math is hard. It's really hard to get along with everybody, right? And to make everybody happy and to get family dynamics, right? And I remember telling a friend, I was like, it's okay, if that's all you do this year is learn how to get along as a family, like, wow, that would be amazing. Right? And we had one year when I had four little kids under the age of six, and I'm pretty sure I had postpartum depression, but I didn't know it at the time. And I was just kind of falling apart in all different ways. And I think that year all we did was hand sew, watch video, like movies about like history things, like we watched like the Ten Commandments and all these old videos, and practice what we call the talking step, which is basically just where I put my kids on the step. And they had to talk out their problems, right? And I think that's all pretty much like when I look back on that year, that's pretty much what we did that whole year. But my kids will still be like, oh, yeah, with all the skills they learned that year, like, I think have set the foundation for our school in a really powerful way. Because now a lot of the skills we taught that year have happened. So. Okay, so this is a little pamphlet called Parents Are Peacemaker. And it's by, oh, you can't see his name. It's kind of a funny name, so let me find my, what was it called? Okay, his name is Essex Cholmondeley, and he was the biographer of Charlotte Mason. So this is not straight from Charlotte Mason, but from the man who was her biographer. And this was written after, right before, during the Second World War, he wrote this. And put together a lot of her philosophies that he had learned from her about peacemaking. And I love this when I found this, because what Charlotte Mason said is that peace happens when needs are met. And that's another one of those like, whoa. And I just want you to like think about that sometimes. That peace in your home, if there's not peace in your home, it means that somebody's needs are not getting met, right? There's some need that is lacking and some need that is missing. And so she said that the first need is leadership. And we'll talk about each of these. And they're not the ones you would think about, right? Like, these are ones a little different. So the second need is healing. The third need is feeding. And she's not talking about food, right? And the fourth need is teaching. And I just think this is interesting, right? Because where is teaching here on your homeschool piece? Down here at the bottom, right? Like, these things are the things that are going to lead to peace in your homeschool so that you can do this, right? So you can get down to the real teaching. But if you don't have these things taken care of, you're going to be struggling to get this need taken care of. All right, so the first need, leadership. And this, I put in italics anything that is from this pamphlet. If it's in italics, it's a quote from Charlotte Mason's biographer. So every person growing up needs one thing that fathers and mothers can give them, and they must give it together. They need wise, firm, loving leadership. Together, you must decide what really matters. Stick to it yourselves and show the children that they must do so too. And this is the part that I love so much. A few just rules always obeyed, a few good manners always followed. And I thought, that is so simple, right? We have to complicate our homes with lots of different rules. And I love her guidance there. And in thinking about leadership, I was just thinking about like driving, right? And about all the rules that we have for driving. And the reason that our driving works is because we have a few just rules, and people obey them, right? And a few good manners always followed, right? And if we didn't have those, it would be chaos. If you've ever been to a country where they don't do those, right? It's really chaos, and travel is hard. You don't get anywhere, right? And if there is no leadership when it comes to driving, again, right? Chaos. There's no enforcement. It's chaos. And so, kind of the first need here is leadership, right? And to think about giving our kids frameworks and guidance and structure that helps them be successful. And it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be a few just rules that are followed. And I love this too, that you have to stick to it. Whatever you decide to, stick to it. And I know that today at this homeschool conference, you have had so many ideas and so many things. You might be tempted to go home and just like jump into something new, right? And I'm going to tell you to like, whoa, back on that just a minute, right? Whoa, back on that. And just take a minute as you go home the next week and think, what things really matter to me? Was there anything that like, what matters to me? What rules do I really care about? And what things do I not care about, right? There might be rules that are good for my family that are not good for yours, right? And to find those things that you really care about. And then to stick to them, things that you can stick to, right? And have that consistency. I put this little thing, because of every one of these needs, right? Where do we start first? With ourselves, right? What leadership, what just rules do you need in your own life? What good manners do you need in your own life that you start with first, right? And I was just thinking about this year I started getting up before my kids. Okay. I feel bad because it's kind of degenerated. My husband was like, no, you're not. Like, he's been waking me up. Like, at the beginning of the year, I was getting up before my kids and getting up early and getting showered and, you know, getting out there ready for my day. I was just like, whoa, the things we accomplished and the way things went better and the way my kids got up and did their jobs. So when they're like, oh, mom's up? She's not, like, lounging around in pajamas all morning? Like, I was just like, wow, you know? So I just thought that's one of those things, like a few rules, right? Those few just rules, like that kind of leadership in your own life. What do you need to change in your own life, right? Are you unified on the rules with your husband? Because I'll tell you, sometimes if we're not unified on stuff, wow, that's really rough, right? Get unified on what your rules are. And sometimes you guys have to work that out together, right? And then make sure your kids know them, right? Make sure you know what they're expected, like what they know and what's expected. Have clear and realistic expectations, right? I was just remembering back to when my cousin and I had little kids all together. We had 3-year-olds, and we would tell them, we would get so upset, like, go upstairs and clean up that mess. Go pick. They would just get all the totes out and the thing. And we would send 2 3-year-old boys up to their room and expect them to clean it, right? And we would get so upset at them. And now looking back, I'm like, oh my goodness, what? They were our first. They felt so big, right? But looking back now, I'm like, we did not have clear expectations on what a 3-year-old could do, right? And I think sometimes, now that I have teenagers, sometimes I have to remind myself of that. Is this one of those 3-year-old things where you're thinking this teenager can do more than they really can, right? Like, have realistic expectations on what you set on your leadership for your kids. Okay, so I just wanted to just have a minute. Like, what ways have you organized your home or your school that has created order and peace? What are some things that you guys have done that have brought order and peace and to your home school? You're like, nothing. Yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily homeschool too much at that point yet. But in the morning while we're getting ready, I'll just turn on like quiet, peaceful, like either church music or even like Beethoven, like quietly. Just because I feel like if I like turn it on, you know, the radio to whatever country song, I get edgy quicker. Mm-hmm. If I have calming, like devotional I'm listening to, my kids like me a lot more.
Yeah. Right, and it sets the mood and sets the tone, right? And it's even going back to that inner circle, right? It's helping you be peaceful. It's helping you be there. So awesome. Any other things you can think of that have helped? Yeah.
I mean, just like a regular, for me, my boys have thrived this year. We started doing World Watch and reading our scriptures and taking time for each other right there in the morning, and then they can move on to math and whatever else they're doing, but it's like helped us to like come together in the morning before we all separate.
Yeah.
And that's helped me to feel like I have order and peace. And then once like we do our first step and then they get to their things and then we come back and do like our family learning time and that's helped.
And
make
it's a moment,
it feel like it's peaceful.
And it's a moment of leadership right at the beginning, right? Like we're here, we're starting together, right? It's not just like everybody doing your own stuff, it's like here we are. That has that leadership and that direction at the beginning, right? That helps them the rest of it. Yeah.
I think what you said, just being on the same page with your spouse is hard, but it makes a huge difference to value what he says, not just be like, oh, I don't quite agree with that.
Yeah.
But try it out and try and work together with him or understand why he really wants that to be done that way and why he wants to expect the kids to do that. And if I have questions about it, not like bringing it up in front of the kids, but talking to him privately, so it's not like, no, they don't need to do that, because that just really hurts his feelings. But just being on the same page, I'm realizing just recently, like, that's really important.
Yeah, it really is. That husband's needs matter too, right? That they, those needs also matter. And respect also. And think about it in a country, right? If you had a president or somebody that did not listen to the other members of their cabinet or listen to their other co-president, right, or whatever, it would not do so well, right? I think that's a great point. Okay, the next one was healing. When I read this quote, it kind of just like was like, whoa. She said, there's no peace in a home where suffering is neglected. And I just thought, I don't know, for some reason that really hit me a little bit about how important it is, like, right, to acknowledge people's feelings, right, and to acknowledge what they're feeling. And this is the Maslow hierarchy of needs. And he was 1940, and Charlotte Mason is like turn of the century. And I thought she was so ahead of her time in so many things. Because this one kind of fits right here, right? We have our psychological needs, which means that we're fed, clothed, safe, not being hunted, right? Right here, down here. This one is our safety needs, which I think comes with the leadership, right? Leadership and structure give us safety, right? Just like on the freeway, if there was no rules, it would not be a safe place to be, right? We have to have that leadership and that structure to make us feel safe. This one, healing, comes in with loving and belonging, right? When we feel like our feelings matter, when we feel like they're being respected and listened to, then we can feel we feel peace, right? We feel safe. She said that empathy and understanding are the foundations of peace. And I just thought, just think about world conflicts, right? Like, if you could get Palestinians and Israelis to sit down together and talk and really understand each other, right, one-on-one, that could go a long way to understanding what they're experiencing. All right, and I love this way that she's put it up too. So she was trying to say that not all problems are on the same level, but sometimes we treat them like they are. So she said that there's mistakes. Our kids will make mistakes. Mistakes do not need punishment. They do not need like shame. They do not need anything. A mistake is just a mistake, right? Like you spilled something, you break something, you didn't know something, you made a mistake. It just needs correction. Gentle of, oh, hey, we don't do that. That wasn't polite, right? Not like, I can't believe you did that. You just shamed me in front of those people. That was a rude comment you just made. We don't say that in front of those people. Or something like that. It's just correction, right? Bad habits mean training into good ones, right? Again, it's not like a bad habit is not like, does not need punishment. It does not need, I was thinking one of our children always leaves their towel on the floor in the bathroom, right? And for a long time, it was like, we just get so angry. I'm just like, oh, why are you doing this? So frustrating. Until just not too long ago, I put this child in charge of cleaning the bathroom. So now their job is to go into the bathroom every day and make sure it's picked up. And sometimes their towel is still there after they get out of the shower, but I've noticed that when I go back in later, that towel is picked up, right? Because we just took a bad habit and trained it into a good one, right? So decide if it's a mistake, if it's a habit, or if it's a wrong action, right? Sometimes there are wrong actions that really do need punishment, and maybe I would have put, this is her word, maybe I would have put correction, right? Or consequences a little bit there. Maybe consequences is the best word, right? A wrong action needs a consequence, because there's some things that really do need that need consequences, right? And sometimes they naturally happen, and other times it's okay to give them if you need to, right? So, and then this last one I think is really powerful. Sorrow needs comfort. And this is where I think the empathy and understanding comes in. That when we have that sorrow and we have those feelings in our home, if we don't acknowledge them, if we don't empathize and understand with them, they can turn into something a lot bigger, right? We need to acknowledge those feelings. And I was just thinking that sorrow is not always crying. And some people's sorrow comes out as anger, right? That's how they express their sorrow. And I was just thinking this morning, the big thing that blew up at our house was over a banana. And one child came into the, okay, so bananas in our house have always been like gold. Like they go like, I buy 25 bananas every week and they go like, and then 2 days, they're gone. Like smoothies, everything. They're like, so somebody had hidden a banana on top of the fridge. And they came in and that banana was gone. Somebody had eaten their banana, right? And it was just like, and this person just reacted huge, right? And really, what they were feeling was sorrow. Because their banana was gone, right? Like, have you ever had that when you're looking forward to eating something and you're like, it's kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah.
And so that feeling of that sorrow, right? So what that person needed in that moment was, oh man, I'm really sorry, I ate your banana, right? Or, oh man, that's tough. Like, if I see it on top of the fridge again, I'm not going to always what we think it is. It can be other things. Yeah.
On your in the previous slide when you had that triangle, I think a lot of students, you see it a lot of colleges and things like that. Sometimes people sit too much in the need for comfort or for healing, and they don't keep living, if that makes sense. And I in our students and in our kids, we need them to know you can sit in an unpeaceful but keep moving forward.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to paralyze you.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
Yes.
So I think that's a skill too in this time, that it doesn't happen just like, okay, the banana's fixed, we'll just go get you a new one, everybody's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't always have a direct solve, and so we have to say, sit with it for a second, think about it, keep moving forward, and maybe the peace will come in a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe even the sorrow could be like, sorry, somebody else needed that banana more than you. Like,
also true.
Yeah, yeah. Like that sorrow might just stay there. There
That's
might
right.
not be a fix to it, right?
That's
like,
right.
It might be like, sorry, that was tough.
That's
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? And that, and like you said, that's a totally okay place to be, right?
Right?
But I think acknowledging it is important,
totally.
Right? Acknowledging those different types of things. So, I love this. For a long time, I had this on a chalkboard in my house because I love this. When people feel better, they act better. This is true for ourselves, right? Back to the circle. How are you feeling? What healing do you need, right? What healing do you and your spouse need? What healing does your family need? And I think that goes physically, right? Like if you get up in the morning, you're showered and your teeth brushed, and your kids are up and they have their hair done nicely and they're not in their pajamas, like things go better, right? When you feel better, you act better. And also emotionally, if you have a kid that you've been harping on all day and their self-esteem is down here, their behavior is not going to be super great, right? Like you can't expect a lot out of somebody that you've just chewed out, right? So I love this too that goes along with healing. And it's hard. All this is hard, right? Like it takes work. And I love this here. The easy way is to leave it all and hope for the best. And I have days when I'm like that. I'm like, oh, I just hope you turn out okay. Like good luck on life, right? But it does not. It takes effort, right? You have to work at it and not give up, right? If we give up, we end up in chaos and we don't get the peace that we want, right? It doesn't come naturally. Okay, we're going to skip this a little bit because I just don't want to get too far behind on thoughts. But if we have more time at the end, we'll talk a bit more. Okay, the next one is feeding. So she's not talking about feeding, but I mean, this is a huge one for world conflict, right? Because if people are hungry, that's going to be the first need that happens, right? Is the conflicts are going to break out of that. And I think the same thing is true when your mind and soul is hungry, you're also going to have that desperate need for something that's going to cause conflict. So here's some different hungers, and I want you to help me tell, like I want you to try to underline or figure out what the underlying hunger is that they need, that this person needs. So I'm bored, can I watch a show? What's the underlying hunger there that this person needs? What are they wanting?
Attention.
Yeah. Attention? Okay. All right. What do you mean by why do they want attention?
Like they want to be entertained, like they want some interaction between something, like they want that.
Yeah, they need something, they want some stimulation, like they need, their brain is like going to mush, and they need something, right? So, you know, there's ways, so a show is going to give that to them, right? But there's a better way to feed that, right? That's like throwing a candy bar. It's like when your kids are hungry and you're like, oh, all I got is a Snickers bar, good luck, you know, right? Like if that's going to be really yummy for them, nourish them, right? Like playing a game or something right there, that's going to get it. What about the next one, I miss you, what are they wanting there?
Love,
yeah, you know about that one, right? Good, yeah, I miss you, right? They're wanting you, they're wanting time, they're wanting somebody, right? There's a need there, right? This one is from my kids. What's the plan tomorrow? What are we gonna do? Anything fun? Like, what's the need there? What's the hunger? Social, right? Like, I need something social. I have one that's like lives and breathes social, and cannot get enough, right? So she's like, what am I doing, Mom? What's the next thing I need to know, right? Jonathan, can I have a pet? What's the hunger there? Responsibility, right? Responsibility. Child Mason said this one could be a thing to be loved, right? I want something to take care of. I want something to love, right? These are hungers. Like, these are deeper hungers that we all have. And these are a list of some of the ones that Charlotte Mason talks about. That we have a hunger. We need things to love, right? That's the pet idea. We need surprises in our life. Like, we hunger for surprises. Like, even people who don't like surprises. I love surprises. But there's people who don't even like surprises. But everybody needs like something new, something different, right? We need that in our life. Things to admire. We need things to aspire to. Things to get our hearts and our mind and get up to a higher level, right? Laughter. This one is a need. This is a hunger. And I feel like a little while ago, I realized that this is something that's missing in my life, right? And I was talking to a cousin, and she's like, yeah, I felt that too, that my family was fighting all the time, and we were not laughing. So she scheduled in, like, watching, like, a funny comedian. She's like, just so we could laugh together. And I was like, oh, right? She's like, she was intentional about scheduling laughter in her life. And I was like, that's a need, right? Things to hope for, right? Hope is a real hunger and need. And if you don't have that in your life, like, you're starving in some way if you don't have that hope for something. A connection with God, right? To feel connected to God, that's a hunger that people have. And to feel loved. Everyone needs that, right? That's another hunger. So if you're having contention, if you're having things, you know, in your life, take a minute and think, what are my kids hungry for? What are they needing? And again here, back to your middle circle, what are you hungry for? What does your soul need? What do you and your spouse need, right? Like, take care of those ones first, and then these things will come easier, right? Okay, I have to share this story real quick. So my neighbor, they have a septic tank at their house, and it was leaking. And it was a big mess, and it was a huge deal. And the septic guy came to them, and he said, you know what your problem is? He's like, you have to make sure that your trees, you have these big, beautiful trees in your yard. He's like, but you have to make sure that these trees are really well watered. I want you to, like, put a sprinkler on them and just make sure that they have all the water they need. He's like, because what's happening is these trees are not going to get water, and their roots are seeking out the next source of water, which is a septic tank, right? So they're going towards the next source of that nourishment, and that's what they need. And this friend just said that really hit her, and she realized, wow, I have to keep my kids well watered. I have to keep them supplied with what they need, or they're going to seek it out. And they might seek it out from the septic tank, right? And I thought that was just a great thing, right? So when we're thinking about that, making sure that we're supplying that, supplying what people need. Okay, last need is teaching. And I loved her definition about what teaching means, because this is not giving lessons. This is not how well educated they are. But she says, what does he or she care about, and how much does he care? And that's the measure of education. What do they care about, and how much do they care, right? And I thought, and I love here too, she said, is it any use of a person to know about many things and to care about none? However well educated a man seems to be, he's only half alive. A good education ought to help each person to be fully alive. And so as we're thinking about as teaching and with our kids, think about that goal, right? About that goal is not to have them know certain things or to pass tests, but to think about what things do they care about and to give them things to care about, right? And to care about and care about good things. And I think this is especially true with teenagers. I think teenagers have a deep, deep need to have things to care about and to see how they can be involved and to be meaningful in the world. And this comes here again to the hierarchy of needs, right? The last one is self-actualization, a desire to become the most that one can be, right? So we see that teaching here, this idea that education should be helping us find those things that we care about, those things that are in our soul, those things that bring us purpose, those things that make us feel alive, right? And I think that the sad thing about our society is so many people are just getting numb, right? They're not finding things they care about. They're getting apathetic. They're not finding that drive. And I think that's an important part of being a complete person, right? Is to reach that step and helping our kids get that. And I think if they don't get it, it can be a source of a contention, right, in our lives. Okay, so how much time? Let's see, like
about 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay, sorry. I was hoping we'd have more time to talk, but 4 or 5 minutes goes by really quick. Okay, so this is something I found. Nancy Kelly is a homeschooler, and she's the one that I found the piece. She has the pamphlet I showed you, the Parents Are Peacemakers, is out of print, and she was the one that found it and put it on a PDF. And so if you sign up on her website, you can get a copy of it through her. But she had this on her website, and I thought this was so brilliant. And she said, keep cutting back until there is peace in your homeschool, right? Keep bringing your circles in until they're manageable. And I was just thinking about this in lots of things, right? If clutter in your house is making you feel crazy, cut it back. Get rid of, like, everything not essential, right? Take it back till there's peace in your physical environment. If you are having struggles with a kid, if you're just if there's contention and fighting over math, like, cut it back. Cut it way back. Maybe you do one problem that day, right? And then next day you do one more. Keep cutting back until you have peace. If, let's see, I have to look at my other example. Oh, yeah, okay. Child, if you don't have time, so if you're feeling resentful because your kids are taking it, like, you don't have time for things that are nourishing you, cut back until you have time to work on that inner circle, right? Cut things out, say no, get time for that inner circle. And cut back your expectations sometimes, right? Sometimes we have expectations that are just not going to happen necessarily, right? And it's okay. I don't think it's giving up sometimes to be realistic in our expectations. Sometimes you have to have your expectations, you have to cut back on your expectations sometimes, right? And to say, hey, this is what we can do right now. This is what we're capable of. This is what this person is capable of. And really making sure that you can cut back on those types of things. So, again, right? Starting with yourself, moving to your spouse, all the way out. And I just want to end with this little this quote by Mother Teresa. My sister has this on the wall of her home, and every time I see it, I love it. She said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. And I just want to end by really, I don't know, just really sharing my belief and my love that as women, we have an incredible influence on the world. And it doesn't always look big and grand and huge, right? Sometimes we're kind of like the unseen, what's the word I'm looking for? Like movers and shakers of the world, right? We're those little things that just keep everything going, but they're so essential to what's going on. And I feel that as we can take time to really focus on each of our individual little nations that we run, the queen of the kingdom that you have, and to really bring peace to that, to bring peace to your heart, and to bring peace between you and your spouse, and to bring peace to your family, that peace will trickle out, and not just trickle out, maybe that's going to shine out, right? It is going to shine out like a beacon to the world, and it will change, and it will make the world a different place. Each little child that you have, right, is like you're launching a little ship. Or you're launching another nation, right? You're creating, you're getting together, and you're going to start, they're going to start their own little nation, right? And they're going to go take what you taught them and what they have from you, and they're going to go make another nation. And that nation is going to expand. And sometimes when I look at people who have those family pictures on their wall, they have like the two old grandparents in the middle, and then there's just this huge posterity behind them, and it says, like, all because two people fell in love, right? Like, it's cutesy, but it's also like, wow, right? Out of two people can come, like, nations and generations, right? Like, what we're doing is not a small thing. And so even when it's hard and it's difficult, it's worth the time and the effort that you're putting into it. And I just want to encourage you and to hopefully that out of this conference and things you've learned, you can take it and make those little changes that will bring peace to you and also to the world. So.